At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello guys and welcome to the Marigold Standard, your weekly audio source of all things Dream Star Fighting Marigold. I'm your host, Rob Goodwin, and as you've probably read in the podcast description, this is another weird Frankenstein's monster episode, and much as I would love to say it's Matt's fault, as long-time listeners have probably already assumed, it is my fault. Unfortunately, it's been a week where, with children being back in college for my job, it means that I've had a lot of late nights. With this show airing on the 8th of September, the Sunday, but not dropping on Wrestle Universe till Tuesday, it was very difficult for me and Matt to negotiate respective calendars and come up with a decent date that we could do that wasn't 2:30 in the morning, which Matt, crazy as he is, probably would have done. So unfortunately, that's where we've got to. We've had to record our parts separately and sort of mash them together. This should be rectified for next week, because the next two nights of the Dream Star Night 3 in Shinkiba and Night 4 in Corrigan Hall are both live. So we should be able to choreograph that. It is scheduled to be released on Tuesday, so keep your eyes out for that. In the meantime, thank you so much for your patience. We are sort of at the beck and call of the Wrestle Universe schedule, though it is a damn sight quicker than Stardom World was. So we are in a decent position with it. It's just that obviously this week has been a bit chaotic, and hopefully these types of episodes will be few and far between in the future. Basically, what we're going to do then today is, I've got a couple of bits of news, nothing too breaking. We did cover most of the news in the Stardom cast that dropped this morning. There's just a couple of things I briefly want to go through. We're then going to talk about the latest Dream Star Grand Prix show, which was Night 2, the third show overall in Beaufort, Toyama. A great show, by the way. Can't wait to talk about that very shortly. And then preview the live two nights, one in Shinkiba on Saturday and one in Corrigan Hall on Monday. That Corrigan Hall show has the potential to be a show of the year contender. Utami Hayashishita versus Mirai. Nanae Takahashi versus Bozilla in their rematch from their absolute slugfest in Corrigan Hall. Mikawauna versus Sari is going to be absolutely fantastic. Some really, really interesting matchups. And it's going to be interesting when me and Matt do the Marigold Standard next week to really see how these leagues have changed and who is at the forefront of each of these leagues, because we could have a far more complete picture of who is going to be in that final in Nagoya coming out of Corrigan Hall. So really, really exciting there. Obviously, I'll give my thoughts first, and then we'll port over to the better looking and more American of the two hosts, Matt, and he will do the official Stardomcast and Marigold Standard sign-off. Just a few very, very brief bits of news then. The first pertains to Marigold. They have announced that alongside the Mikawauna photo book and the Chikagoto photo book, Koki Amare's photo book called Amethyst Aura will go on sale at that aforementioned Corrigan Hall show. It's 56 pages and was actually produced and designed by Koki herself. So fair play to Koki Amare for that. Some of the pictures I think have been displayed. I know that Koki has put together a video of some of the shoot, and the photos look really, really good. So the fact that it's been commissioned and all designed by her, brilliant. If you're going to be in Corrigan Hall, first of all, you lucky devils. If you're there, make sure you show your support for the Amethyst Butterfly. Second thing, and this does contain spoilers, so just fast forward ahead, say 30 seconds. I'll give you time to do that. Okay, we have had a Sendai Girls show today at the time recording, 13th of September, which saw Mikiri Wata versus Seoriano in a rematch for the Sendai Girls World Championship. Of course, Seoriano having defended that belt on the 24th of August against Dash Chisako, which coincidentally has just today dropped on Stardom World for those that want to watch it. However, in this match against Mika Iwata, Seoriano failed in her second title defense. Third title defense, I apologize. Second? Third. I should have researched this. Anyway, she failed, and Mika Iwata is your new Sendai Girls World Champion. The match is live on Wrestle Universe. The entire show was live on Wrestle Universe, so that is in the archives, and it will soon air on Stardom World as well, I have no doubt. We did get rather an interesting, back to Marigold, we did get a very interesting tweet from the Marigold Joshi Twitter page. The fact that, and this is something I really enjoy, so the five-star Grand Prix, especially recently, we have very grand opening packages. The 2023 one was absolutely sensational from what I remember, but we only get it once. Pardon me. The Marigold sort of opening ceremony or presentation will be taking place at the start of every single show. Basically, with under the premise that fans around the country can witness, as they put it, the pageantry. I really like that idea, because it does sort of, because we had it after the opening tag match in both at Toyama. I really enjoy the fact that we have, right, look at these competitors, this is what we are going to do now. They really add a layer of importance by doing that. So excellent, excellent stuff. We get to see that every single time. My last bit of news before I jump into the review of both at Toyama drops from Mina Shirakawa on Twitter today. Now, I had absolutely no idea about this, and I've only sort of seen it through scrolling through Twitter, and I'm hoping it's not, you know, as blown up as a few people are making it out to be. Basically, she was announced late for a photograph signing, I believe in Osaka. I might be wrong. I think it's in her actual tweet. And I'm not going to read the tweet out to you, but basically she was announced late because she didn't know if she'd be there, which I think is reasonable enough. She said that people were understandably upset that they didn't know she was going to be there. If they'd have known she was going to be there, they'd have turned up. However, apparently abuse has then been levied via social media towards Bushiroad, towards Taro Okada, for not announcing Mina Shirakawa. What are you doing? Like, come on. Like, do we need to take social media off you? Like, really? Don't be a plum. Don't ruin it for everyone else. Did people not learn from the abuse given to Saya Kamatani? Like, I know it's not the same sort of thing, but, like, just use social media for good. Is it really that hard? And actually, the moment that you take a rational moment, Mina actually says, and I understand that this isn't going to be the vast majority of fans. I know it's probably not going to be the vast majority of Western fans either, but even so, Mina actually said that basically there is a lot of moving parts in regards to her schedule. And she actually says here, "I'm sure I'll continue to confuse everyone with my schedule in Japan and the US, but I'm sorry, I hope you understand." If she doesn't know her schedule, I'm sure that Taro Okada and Bushiroad aren't going to know her schedule either. So let's just back off a little bit and just give them time, okay? And just give them a little bit of leeway. I think there are far more important things to get upset about. But anyway, that being said, let's move on to something considerably more exciting, and that is night 2 of the Dreamstar Grand Prix. As I mentioned before, the 3rd overall. We were in Beaufort, Toyama on the 8th of September 2024. 305 people in attendance. Now, just to give you some indication, I don't ordinarily like comparing Marigold to Stardom because I know that each company is trying to do their own thing. But at the moment, especially only, I believe Marigold, that doesn't help, does it? Jesus. I believe Marigold are only 27 shows into their history. So at the moment where they're running venues for the first time, to try and give you a comparison, it's the only sort of thing we can do at the moment. 305 people, as I mentioned, were in attendance here. To give you an indication, Stardom's average at Beaufort Toyama is around 340. So it's just under the Stardom average. I think the lowest attendance that Stardom have had at the venue is 270. So it's a decent enough number at Beaufort Toyama. What I did like about this show, with it being single cam, a lot of single cam shows can be very, I don't want to use the phrase boring, that's not the word I'm looking for, but you very, very quickly become, I don't know, a little bit jaded with it. A little bit, because it is those camera cuts, not Kevin Dunn camera cuts, but it's those camera cuts and things that can often add to the drama of a wrestling show. And, you know, I was worried when it was like, oh, it's a single cam show. But actually, I quite liked it where it was perched. I'd love to know if you guys liked that as well. But the fact that it was perched above where the wrestlers are coming in, it seemed to give it a really airy vibe. I don't know why. It might just be me. But that's by the by. Couple of notes. Obviously, Rhea Sato, who was at ringside throughout this, she is still out of action in terms of wrestling, though she did get involved in the Bozilla and Miko Anno match we'll be talking about shortly. I'm not sure how wise that was, but she did get involved, however briefly. She is still out till the end of September. However, better news is that now Ishikawa, who has been absent from these first three shows of the Dreamstar Grand Prix, is announced to take part in the 3rd show at Shinkiba, where she is in a 3-way. So that is really, really, really good news. So going back to the show, just to give you a quick reminder of where we were in Dream League, we had Mirai Nori and Natsumi Shozuki all tied at the top of Dream League with 3 points. We then had, obviously, Chika Goto right at the bottom on 0, alongside Koki Amore as well. In terms of Star League, it was a little bit different because Sari hadn't wrestled yet. But at the top of the block, we had Miko Anno and Bozilla, who are the only two competitors across these two leagues that had gone 2-0 in this block. They would meet up in the semi-main event of this show here. In terms of the results, let's go through them now. We opened with a tag team match. Kazuna Tanaka and Mirai defeating Myla Grace and Chiaki when Mirai pinned Grace with the lariat in 8 minutes and 7 seconds. We then had, as I mentioned, the presentation, and we moved into our league matches. We start with 3 straight Dream League matches. Dream League match, Nori moved to 5 points, defeating Chikagoto, who stays on 0, with a spin kick in 9 minutes and 28 seconds. Another Dream League match, Utami Hayashishita moves to 4 points, defeating Victoria Yuzuki, who stays on 1 point, with the shocking Baszler in 8 minutes and 7 seconds. Dream League match again, Koki Amore getting her first victory, moving to 2 points, defeating Natsumi Shozuki, who stays on 3 points, with a modified roll-up in 11 minutes and 20 seconds, just after a very, very near escape with a back suplex, which we're going to talk about when we get to that match. Star League now, Nanae Takahashi bounces back from a loss to Mei Sakurai by winning against Misa Matsui with the 1 second EX in 11 minutes and 3 seconds. In your semi-main event, it was a rematch of the first United National Championship match. However, this time, Bozilla gets the win, moving to 6 points, defeating Miko Anno, who remains on 4, with the Styles Clash of all things in 9 minutes and 8 seconds. And then in your main event, another Star League match, the Crimson Red Belt champion Sari makes her tournament bow, defeating Mai Sakurai with a wrist clutch back suplex in 11 minutes and 13 seconds. So let's start with that opening tag. It was a fun match. It was, the whole point was to whet people's appetites going in. And at least initially, it seemed to be built around a bit of friction between the team of Grace and Chiaki, with their bickering ultimately leading to Mirai and Tanaka hitting stereo dropkicks and taking charge early on. The match really does brighten up when Mirai is in. And since Stuart Fulton and Sonny have been bringing it up on commentary about her smile, genuinely, how much does she enjoy wrestling, being in that ring? It really does permeate into the match. Of course, it helps that you're in the ring alongside someone with such a sunny disposition as Kazuna Tanaka as well. But even so, the fact that Mirai is clearly having the absolute time of her life really does elevate proceedings. There's more ongoing disagreements between Chiaki and Myla, with Chiaki looking to use the chair. She actually throws Myla Grace into the referee so that she can use the chair. Myla refuses, grabs it off Chiaki as she goes to hit Mirai with it. She pays for her conscientious observation of the rules, even though it looks like she might win with a couple of roll-ups and a swinging neck breaker, but Mirai ultimately absolutely decimates her with a ripcord lariat for the win. It's a fun opener. Do you have to go out of your way to see it? No. However, good performance from Kazuna Tanaka. It's always fun to see Mirai in these tag matches and in these, just across the card, let's be perfectly honest. And again, Myla Grace is improving leaps and bounds every time she enters into the ring. I gave it 2.5 stars. It's a decent enough opener. Moving on to Nori and Chikagoto, I don't think I'm the only person in the world who thinks that Nori has been incredibly impressive in her opening tournament matches. And with the win here, she actually goes clear at the top of the block. Chikagoto, and this is something that I've talked about in the last episode, that she's putting on very impressive performances, however, ultimately failing to make that count. And it looks very much like it could be the same story here, because Goto looks for that Greco-Roman knuckle lock by holding her hand up in the eye, trying to assert dominance by being the tallest. Doesn't take heed at all of Nori spin kicking it out of their way. She tries another one and ends up eating a whole flurry of kicks for this. And this sort of sets a tempo for the rest of the match. Now, don't get me wrong, Chikagoto has her moments. She lands the hip attacks, manages to get the giant swing in, and even when she's snapmared and kicked by Nori, and some of those kicks are absolutely vicious, by the way, they do properly sound off like gunshots around this arena. She's screaming for more, even though it's obviously very, very painful. Even when Nori's throwing forearms, like, Chika Goto will not let go of the hand. They're maintaining wrist control. She's not letting go, even though it's very, very painful. And she responds with forearms of her own. Eventually, she gets stunned by a buzzsaw kick, manages to kick out of the resultant pinfall at one, which gets a huge, huge pop. However, that's the moment that Nori brings out the spin kick, floors Goto like a felled tree, ultimately giving Nori her second win of the tournament. For me, anyway, this is Goto's best performance of the tournament this far. Now, bearing in mind that she had a really, really, really good match with Mirai, a really good match with Utami, her courageous underdog spirit really does play off so well against someone who is such a potent striker as Nori is. Her demands for more, the gritty determination not to back down, they're going to stand her in good stead moving forward. Though, ultimately, the disappointing results continue to come. This probably isn't going to be Chika Goto's year. I don't think anyone moved in, you know, came into this tournament thinking it was going to be Chika Goto's year. But the fact that she is able to put on these performances, and then couple that with the couple of tag matches preceding this, the one in Gorakon Hall especially, and, you know, the more people are behind her, the more she's going to develop, the more confident she's going to get, and she is going to get that win. I don't doubt that she'll get a win in this tournament. Will she go through? No, probably not. She's lost three back-to-back-to-back. However, I do believe that her improvement is telling. And maybe not even next year, but the year after, we could be looking, you know, fingers crossed about injuries and, you know, all that sort of jazz. After all, this is the world of wrestling. But there is every chance that Chika Goto could be someone we are talking about in contention, because she has everything you could possibly want, all the pieces to become a really, really impressive babyface. In terms of Nori, I am so impressed with Nori. And if Marigold and the Hatman can sign her, I don't want to say poach, as Kandori was pointing out, but if they can get her to a deal, that's going to be fantastic. It really, really is. Now, we'll just say as well, not enough people are talking about how darn catchy Nori's entrance theme is. Like, what a foot stomper that is. Like, genuinely, more people do need to be talking about how good this theme is. 3.5 stars from me, a really, really, really enjoyable match. Moving on to Utami and Victoria Yuzuki. A, I'm really happy that the Shocking Basil was bought out, and it was bought into the match really, really well. The fact that this was the unquestionable ace of the company in Utami Hayashishita against the potential future ace really, really, really excited me. Of course, Utami has a lot to prove. She lost to Nagisa Nozaki in that opening show. She recovered with the victory against Chika Goto. And what we get is a really, really fantastic match playing the youthful exuberance off against a near insurmountable ace. It's such a fun dynamic to watch, and both these two play it really, really, really well. Victoria Yuzuki is basically a ball of energy, absolutely no fear, with a ferocious sense of passion. And for the opening throws of this match, it's Utami repeatedly having to put Yuzuki down as she repeatedly bounces up and down. It's very much like the Marigold version of a whack-a-mole. Yuzuki just won't stay down, continues to try and wear down Utami. However, there is a point where passion, unless you're Nanae Takahashi, of course, can be counterintuitive. And that's what we see unfolding here, with Yuzuki repeatedly sprinting full tilt into forearms and into lariats, as though her zeal and her desperation to prove herself is causing her to make mistakes. Twice, she gets caught in different variations of the air raid crash simply because of this. And it's actually only when she slows things down that she gets the biggest opening of the match for her in the way of a really tight near fall with the rolling arrow. Utami, for her part, obviously I don't need to to preach to the choir. You're listening to this. Presumably, you're all enormous fans of just how damn good Utami is. But she comes across as imperious whilst also allowing Yuzuki a lot of leeway, which is a difficult line to toe. She sells her offense beautifully. That bump from a crucifix bomb, which leads to her not being able to bridge properly off the German suplex and means that she has to amend her offense. It's little nuances like that that put Utami in a class of her own in Marigold in general. Rather aptly, it's Yuzuki's zeal again that leads to the end of this match. She charges, this time is caught in the shocking Baszler. And I really enjoyed the fact that Utami wasn't using the German suplex because of the fact that the neck injury was just a little bit too severe. Uses the shocking Baszler and the fact that she's able to deadlift Victoria Yuzuki into this. Remarkably impressive. Gives Hayashista her second victory of the tournament, and it does sort of correct course after that shock loss to Nagisa Nozaki. Yuzuki's destined for great things. The way she wrestles this match just seems to add fuel to that fire and of what I and literally everyone that watches Marigold has been saying for months. She just gets pro wrestling. She's an incredibly special talent and, in my eyes, definitely is the future ace of Marigold. The future ace. Because the current ace is Utami. She is the now. And wherever she enters an arena at the moment, you feel the air almost change. She was one person missing for 3 weeks. And the Marigold shows, genuinely, even though the other wrestlers did a sterling job of the matches and covering for the fact that she wasn't there, you felt like there was a huge hole when Utami wasn't there. And that is that aura, that star quality, that charisma that Hayashista has in spades. And of course, it helps when you are a phenomenal in-ring talent as she is. I mean, we had Sonny Gutierrez on a couple of months ago, hoping to have him on again very soon. And he said that, you know, there's very few people, if any, that can match Utami. And you have to agree, you know, on the basis of evidence, you know, everything she does elicits very positive reactions from people that watch. There's a reason that Io Sky was paired off with Utami Hayashista. It wasn't just because Utami Hayashista held her as an idol. Many, many people, presumably many in Marigold, held Io Sky rather as an idol with the reason they got into pro wrestling. But it was Utami that was trusted with it. And to my mind, that is still far and away Marigold's best match of the tournament, best match of their run, sorry, so far. This match is great. I gave this 4 stars. Genuinely, Victoria Yuzuki, 4 years, 2028 Dreamstar Grand Prix. Put it in your diaries. I think she will be in at least the final in 2028. That's my prediction. Okay? Could be sooner, but I'm going 2028. So there we go. That's your little hot take. What shall win it next year now? Moving on to Koki Amore and Natsumi Shozuki. Now, I had absolutely no idea that these two have as much history as they actually do. Even before Marigold, because they were in a faction together, the Royal, I believe, in AWG. I'm sure Plug Pedro will be able to tell me more about that. But they battled against and with each other on multiple occasions. I believe altogether they've had 20 plus matches in the ring together, whether that's on the same team or whether that's opposing. But this is actually their first singles match, which is really interesting. And of course, when you then throw in the fact that it was Natsumi Shozuki and Miko Aono who eliminated Koki Amore and Chika Goto, the Twin Towers, from that Marigold Twin Stars tournament, you've obviously got a lot of heat there. This is a rather scratchy opening, which didn't really surprise me, because that's how Shozuki likes to wrestle. I find her quite gritty in a good way. And it's Koki Amore that sort of uses her height and reach to her advantage, especially with those really big boots. However, Shozuki then looks to negate that by going after Amore's leg. Now, this is where she makes a mistake in my eyes. It's a sound strategy, but not one she capitalizes on, because in her desperation for that victory, bearing in mind that Nori has already won, Shozuki knows she needs to win to keep pace at the top of the league, she changes tack and begins attacking Koki's arm instead. Now, from that moment, even though there is very obvious damage done to Koki's leg, you don't feel like Natsumi Shozuki is in control of the match. It's a mistake, and she never really regains control. And it's actually Amore that rallies. She kicks out of a Shozuki fisherman suplex, and she's the one that you actually feel, as the match careers closer to its ending, that it's Koki that's going to get the victory. You know, she hits the Amethyst Butterfly with Shozuki just kicking out in time. Koki Amore then drops Shozuki with a horrendous back suplex. Now, I don't know if it was just a little bit of miscommunication, Shozuki being a little bit, shall we say, elaborate with her landing, but had she not got her hands up in time, she would have landed smack on the top of her head, and we'd have been having a very, very different conversation, because that would have been a very dangerous landing. Luckily, she does get her hands up in time. Koki Amore then wraps her up in a variation of a crucifix pin and wins her first tournament match, and she moves to 2 points. Shozuki, as I've just mentioned, misses the chance to draw level with Nori at the top of the block and will be ruining that missed opportunity. She had the chance to put Amore away, to continue the abuse of the leg, and she changes tack inexplicably out of desperation. Now, for Koki, she was very over with the crowd from the very outset. This is a huge win, and a win over a champion. It could mean a championship match down the line. I don't quite know how they'd fudge that with the weight limit. However, I'd be more than happy to see a repeat of this match. I thought these two had really good chemistry together. I thought they worked really, really well. Gave it 3.25 stars. Overall, a really, really fun match in the center of this card. Nanae Takahashi and Misa Matsui, the passion injection match from these two back in June, is widely considered, and by widely considered, I mean by me, to be one of the most underrated matches in the company's short history. However, fast forward to now, and both women find themselves on 0 points, with Nanae on the receiving end of a Mai Sakurai win, and Matsui having endured back-to-back defeats to start her own tournament. Now, Misa Matsui has the right idea. Completely destroys the arm of Nanae Takahashi for the entirety of this match. She is relentless, completely foregoing that fast start. You know, we're trading waist locks, and when Nanae eventually comes out on top due to the power and experience, Matsui just literally, like a shark with blood in the water, zeroes in every time Takahashi goes for a lariat. She finds herself caught in an armbar. It gets really ragged as the pace quickens. However, whereas Shozuki, out of desperation and perhaps a little bit of naivety or whatever it was, Matsui doesn't fall into that trap. She continues to target that arm, gets a really close count with the European clutch, which they've done a really good job, Marigold, of building as a really, really dangerous pin maneuver. However, she falls into the same trap as Victoria Yuzuki. She becomes too overzealous. Yes, she has gone to war on Nanae's arm, and Nanae is undoubtedly struggling. However, Nanae is a living Joshi legend, as her nickname entails, and she's able to wait Misa Matsui out, knowing that she's going to make a mistake, knowing she's going to be, again, too overzealous, and she charges once too often. And whereas before she's been able to counter the Nanae lariat, she gets flattened by this one. Absolutely flattened. Nanae hits her with the Nanoraka. Misa is able to kick out just before the 3 count, but before she has time to recover, Takahashi hoists her up into the 1 second EX for the victory, her first victory of the tournament. we talk all the time on the podcast about how losses can still be beneficial to you. You can still feel elevated because of a loss. It's how you lose. Misa Matsui at the moment seems to be the living embodiment of that. You know, in spite of struggling both with her footing and her knee pad at varying points in this match, she was fantastic, just as she has been throughout this entire tournament. It's not the result, again, similar to Chika Goto, but due to her tenacity and her determination, you know that victory is coming. It's just around the corner. And yeah, again, it's another example of why I think Nanae is doing such stellar work in Marigold. The amount of people who feel elevated from having these matches with Nanae, it truly is exceptional and really does go to show what fantastic talent she really is. Again, I will say it again, you know, long-time listeners of the Stardom cast and indeed of the Marigold Standard will know that I was not a fan of Nanae's later run in Stardom. I can't believe this is the same person. Incredible stuff. Misa feels elevated because of this match. Another four stars. Again, a really, really frantic match and a really, really well-worked one as well. Semi-main event, it's the rematch, as I mentioned, of the pure white belt match from the Summer Destiny show in Ryogoku. The two unbeaten heavy hitters in Bozilla and Miku Aono. Bozilla is in a terrifyingly savage mood tonight. And as the action makes its way to the outside and Aono involuntarily into the chairs, it looks like we could be done in very, very, very short order. However, that changes when Aono begins to target Bozilla's knee. She stuns her on the outside and then rolls her into the ring and continues that assault on the knee. And unlike Shozuki earlier in the night, Aono, similar to Matsui in the previous match, is completely unrelenting in that attack of the leg. And whenever Bozilla powers up, she bounces back. However, Bozilla is a German powerhouse and she continues to get up repeatedly. Aono is flattened with lariats, gets hit with a missile dropkick, the Vader bomb, all of these things rain down on the champion, but still Aono persists in targeting that knee, the inverted figure four leg lock, looking especially close to gaining that victory. And Bozilla isn't human, as we know, and just as it looks like Miku Aono is going to be able to hoist her up into the Styles Clash, Bozilla again powers up and is able to back body drop her. We do get a nice little callback to their Summer Destiny match with a series of roll-ups from Miku Aono, but these are the only fleeting chances she has to pin Bozilla after this. She hits a devastating spinning sit-out powerbomb. That isn't quite enough to put Miku Aono down. But however, rather than then go to the drill hole pile driver, which has been very good in getting her victories recently, Bozilla chooses to rub salt into the wound, instead planting Miku Aono with her own Styles Clash and then covers her for the win, delivering her first loss of the tournament, her first ever singles loss, and moves Bozilla to 6 points at the top of Star League. Now, Aono is furious at this, and a brief post-match scuffle breaks out with the pair having to be separated by the likes of Rio Sato, who, I know you've got a fractured rib. Trying to keep Bozilla away from people might be a little bit of a stretch. Victoria Yuzuki comes in. I have a feeling that if Bozilla was in any way interested in finding Miku Aono after the bell, she would have done. I doubt that Rio Sato and Victoria Yuzuki could have stopped her. However, looks like she's going to walk away, but instead she makes for the timekeeper's area where Miko's title sits, saunters towards Aono in the ring with a pure white belt over her shoulder, and it looks for all the world like she's going to lay out the challenge. However, and I do like this, instead she lobs the belt into the ring and says, "I only care about the Crimson Red Belt." Now, if we are veering towards a Sari and Bozilla program, count me all the way in. Don't forget, that's a match that we have not seen yet, and we are going to get later on the tournament. Both are in Star League. That is going to be very, very interesting. One of these women is going to have to come out on top, and it wouldn't surprise me if it is Bozilla, and that's a red belt defense further down the line. These two are another great pairing. They have really good chemistry. It's perhaps helped by Miku being one of the only people on the roster that it's actually believable could pin Bozilla. I mean, she executes the plan of cutting out Bozilla's leg from under her with ruthless precision, but it's that unmatched power of Bozilla. And in short, though I still consider her match with Nane at Korakuen to be her best and most competitive singles outing, I'd have to say this is a close second. Because even though, you know, Bozilla got a Bozilla, you know, she's got to get that power move in, and she's got to toe that line between being a completely dominating badass, but also not just completely burying every single opponent she's against. I feel like, especially in this match with Miko Arno, she found that balance really well. And that's because every villain has got to have a weakness. Miko Arno found that weakness, and she just wasn't quite able to sort of keep drilling at that weakness enough to secure the victory. It was just because Bozilla is just that little bit too strong. And the fact that Bozilla is now using Miko Arno's move as basically a big middle finger, huge, huge fan of this. Really enjoyed this match again. This show is very, very good, top to bottom. 3¾ stars from me. And then we move on to the main event, Sari's first outing in the tournament. Mai Sakurai, of course, coming off the back of a star-making performance against Julia in Korakuen, and then another impressive victory over Nanae Takahashi. And she is chomping at the bit to get started, and she immediately makes for Sari's arm. Doesn't even let Sari get in the ring properly. Of course, this is Sari's first match in Marigold, aside from the one-minute match against Julia during her farewell gauntlet, since she fractured her wrist. And Mai is absolutely determined to cause and inflict as much pain on that as possible. Immediately we move to the outside, volley of strikes and stomps. Mai grabs a chair from ringside, hurls it at the bad wrist, properly looks like that hurts, before planting her with a shotgun dropkick, and then she runs her into the corner post, and the action comes back into the ring. However, Sari isn't the Crimson Red Belt champion for nothing, and she begins unloading on Mai. There have been interviews, of course, we saw it a couple of months ago, with Sari basically calling out the entirety of the Marigold roster for not being able to beat her, not being able to step up to her level. And after Utami lost to Nagisa Nozaki, she came out with even more of these barbs, especially aimed towards Utami. And Sari just seems to be on a one-woman mission to hurt and destroy this Marigold roster. And the way that she absolutely unloads with a blistering response that sends Sakurai staggering back is truly alarming at times. There's some slaps that are gut-wrenching. However, and this is the best bit, Mai Sakurai doesn't only not back down, she is there for the fight. She wants this fight. I mean, we end up back on the outside after Sari hits this fisherman suplex. She goes to the top rope. Mai Sakurai boots her off the top rope to the outside. Hits a diving crossbody. We're into the chairs. It's a brawl. It's chaos. We move back into the ring. Even more of the forearms. She manages, Sakurai manages to elbow herself free of a wrist clutch Uranagi attempt, and then flattens Sari with a big boot and a drop kick. Sari kicks out of the Tiger Suplex. The Goodwin elbow drop, we know, the most devastating move in Marigold. And then she eventually manages to crawl agonizingly to the ropes to break an STF. And this is the first moment in the match where it looks like Mai might be running short on options to finally put Sari down. She goes for the Glorious Driver, only for Sari to spin free and land a disgusting headbutt. These headbutts are never fun to listen to, but the echo is grotesque. It really is. It echoes with this dull thud around the entire venue. Mai is stunned. Sari snatches her up into the Uranage. Mai somehow kicks out, rather groggily, admittedly, but seemingly more out of instinct than anything else, wasting absolutely no time whatsoever. Sari hauls her back to her feet, and the way that she basically muscles her, deadlifting her into a wrist clutch back suplex, is incredibly impressive and adds that layer of gritty realism that I really do enjoy about Sari matches. It keeps her shoulders down, gets the win, and moves to 2 points. I mean, it's been a special year for Sari in terms of match quality. There are very few, if anyone, maybe Mayu Iwatani, that can match her. She really does just seem to put on a show every single time she steps into the ring. And she repeatedly proves that she's able to have outstanding matches at any point and with anyone. More importantly, in this particular match, is another in a rapidly growing list of excellent Mai Sakurai singles matches. I mean, again, Sari is on that level at the moment where you could quite literally put her in the ring with a bin bag and she would still have a 3.5-star match. She is a very, very, very special wrestler and we should absolutely be taking advantage while she's here. However, Mai Sakurai, again, similar to Nanae, I can't believe this is the same wrestler from last year. I'm watching this match with Sari going, where on earth has this fire been, this passion, these brutish strikes? Honestly, this tournament, me and Matt have been talking about breakout stars, and the breakout star was more aimed at someone who is on that undercard. I know that we highlighted Misa Matsui, who's doing a fantastic job. Kazuna Tanaka, I know, was highlighted. Mai Sakurai wasn't highlighted because we already, you know, off the back of that Julia performance, had already elevated her to the upper mid-card of, you know, the very upper mid-card. Matt even has her getting through Star League to the final of the Dreamstar Grand Prix. And yet I still think she's managing to break out. She's even managing to surpass the expectations put in place after this Julia match. And, you know, whether that is an answer to the rallying call or the sarcastic rallying call of Sari, or whether it is just because she's, you know, allowed to flex, allowed to spread her wings, if you will. You know, we've seen what it's done for Mirai. We've seen what it's done for Victoria Yuzuki. Now we're seeing what it's doing for Mai Sakurai. Absolutely fantastic match. 4.25 stars. This entire show, top to bottom, with the exception of that opening tag, which is still fun in its own right, is absolutely brilliant. Absolutely go out of your way to see this show. It's really, really fun. It goes by like that. No 15-minute time limit draws, so Hatman being very, very reserved in that. Just a quick running through of the standings as we head into Shinkiba on Saturday. Dream League is as follows. Nori sits at the top. 2 wins, no losses, 1 draw on 5 points. Utami is in second, 2 wins, 1 loss on 4 points. Mirai, with 1 win, no losses, and 1 draw, is at 3 points in third. Natsumi Shozuki is in fourth, 1-1-1 with 3 points. Nagisa Nozaki, 1-1, 2 points next. Koki Amore with the same, 2 points. Victoria Yuzuki sitting second, bottom of the block, 0 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw with 1 point. And then propping up the block, Chika Goto, no wins, 3 losses, 0 points. However, you know what they say about the people at the bottom. They are the strongest because they're holding everybody else up. Star League, then Bozilla, the only person at the moment to wrestle 3 matches and win 3 matches. She's currently 3-0-0 with 6 points. Miku Aono sits at second, having endured her first singles loss, 2-1. Sari, now in third with 1 victory, 2 points. Mai Sakurai, 1-1 on 2 points. Same with Nanae Takahashi. Chiaki is 0-1 on 0 points. Kazuna Tanaka, the same on 0 points. And then propping up Star League, Misa Matsui, 0 and 3. So just to whip through what we have got on tap this weekend, we are in Shinkiba on the 14th of September, which is tomorrow as we record on Saturday. We will be live on Wrestle Universe, so make sure to check that out. Your matches are as follows: Koki Amore versus Victoria Yuzuki and Nagisa Nozaki versus Nori from the Dream League. The Star League sees Sari versus Chiaki, Nanae Takahashi versus Kazuna Tanaka, and a potential for a bit of an upset here with Mai Sakurai versus Bozilla as well. Night 4 then, Monday the 16th of September. It's an early start. It's 3:15, I believe, British Standard Time. So it is early. It's a holiday in Japan. And this is where your really, really, really big matches are. This card is stacked. So in the Dream League, we have got Utami Hayashishita versus Mirai, which has early match of the tournament vibes. It really does. Natsumi Shozuki versus Nori. Again, both women very, very strike heavy. Natsumi Shozuki has no filter whatsoever. So yes, Nori will probably flatten her, but Natsumi Shozuki will get straight up and will persist to try and flatten Nori as well. Chika Goto versus Victoria Yuzuki. Star League sees the red belt champion and the white belt champion against each other, Sari and Miku Aono. As I mentioned before, Nanae Takahashi versus Bozilla, Mai Sakurai versus Kazuna Tanaka, and Misa Matsui versus Chiaki as well. Two absolutely loaded cars, especially that Korakuen Hall show. That is going to be a very, very tasty card. Myself and Matt, hopefully, fingers crossed, will be reconvened together so that we can go through those two shows. That should be in your feeds on Tuesday evening. Please keep an eye out for that. If it's not going to be that day, which it should be, but if it's not going to be, we'll announce on social media, but again, it should be. Thank you so much for listening, guys. We really do appreciate it. Apologies once more for the Frankenstein's monster of an episode. If you think we've deserved a 5-star review, it really would go a long way on iTunes and Spotify. A comment really helps as well. Helps us be exposed to more people. We're also on all of the social medias. We're on all of the podcast platforms. If you type out Stardomcast or indeed Marigold Standard, we will come up. You can find us on social media at The Stardomcast. Don't forget to check out the website, www.thestardomcast.com, for all of the backdated episodes of the Marigold Standard and all of the stats regarding Marigold as well, which we will hopefully be posting on social media very, very soon, looking at the end of the Dream Star for that. Don't forget, if you want these episodes early and ad-free, you can sign up to our Patreon, patreon.com/thestardomcast. For as little as $1 a month, you can get all of these episodes early and ad-free. There is over 500 different posts over on Patreon. Thank you to every single person that has contributed to that. All of you are awesome. We could not do this without you. Thank you so, 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 so much. If for whatever reason you want to talk to me on Twitter, you can at @RealRobGoodwin. I'm not going to do Matt's socials because you're going to hear his beautiful dulcet tones now, his husky, sexy voice. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. Matt Turner.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CareCare is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Marigold Standard. This is the podcast where we talk all things about the fantastic new, tremendous professional wrestling company that is Dream Star Fighting Marigold. Folks, I'm your host for this episode. My name is Matt Turner, and unfortunately, folks, this is going to be another episode where myself and Rob Goodwin just could not find the time to podcast together. So we're going to do my thoughts, we're going to do Rob's thoughts, and then we're kind of, as he says, Frankenstein patch these two shows together. And I apologize. I know about a month or so ago, we did one like this. And then back when I was away at work, in the beginning of the summer, we did one like that as well. Not the first time, probably won't be the last. It's just been such a busy, busy week for myself and Rob, considering the fact that Rob is in full school swing and he has so many meetings set up, parent meetings, teacher meetings, student meetings, that he just couldn't find the time. And then myself, I'm slammed with certain meetings and last-minute meetings coming up, or last-minute meetings that have basically kind of thrown my schedule off. Throw that in the fact that Friday, I'm going to be away for half the day, going to go see one of my favorite bands of all time, the Mighty Megadeth. Obviously, huge, huge fan of the Megadeth. Peace sells, but who's buying? So, unfortunately, we only had one show to review. Just the third show from the Dream Star tournament, the Dream Star, Grand Prix. So we were thinking about maybe pushing the show off a week, but we decided, you know what, I'll record my thoughts, Rob will do his stuff, and I'll kind of just put everything together just to give everybody, the fantastic listeners of the Marigold Standard, just a little something to kind of hold you over. So again, folks, apologies, but we kind of just want to just put something out there to get some context out there. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to review. I don't have many news and notes here. That's kind of Rob's thing. So I'll let him know that any news and notes just for him to handle. So my portion's not going to be that long because we just have the one show to talk about, the seven matches from the 8th of September. And then we will close it on the brand new segment, A Gaze at Julia, as Julia was all over the NXT TV just the other night. So that's what we're going to do, folks. And again, apologies, and we appreciate your patience and your understanding. It's just been a really, really busy week for myself and one Rob Goodwin. So, folks, I guess without any further ado, as long as everybody's doing A-OK and you're having a great day and beautiful. I don't know where you're at in the world, but here in northeastern Pennsylvania, the first week, really we're on week two of September. We're only about a week away from actual fall season. It is beautiful, beautiful out. So, but without any further ado, folks, let's get into the Dream Star show number 3 from September the 8th, 2024. We open with a tag match as the makeshift team Mirai and Kazuna Tanaka defeat Chiaki and Myla Grace when Mirai hits the Rainmaker to Myla Grace. And what I'm going to do, folks, I'm just going to go through the results, go through the updated standings, and then I'm going to go back and just do the highlights, and then we'll do our gaze at Julia. Match number 2 is our official, for our first official Dream Star Grand Prix, a tournament match, as we go to the Dream League, as Nori picks up 2 more points, taking her to 5, defeating Chika Goto with a 360 spin kick. We stay in the Dream bracket with Utami Hayashista picking up another 2 points, taking her to 4, defeating One Yuzuki in a fantastic match with the Shocking Baszler. We go to the fourth match on the show, staying in the Dream League, where we see Koki Amore defeating Natsumi Shozuki with this really wicked wrist clutch back suplex. I really, really like that. Hope that she's using that more often on these upcoming shows. We then go to the Star League, where Nanai Takahashi, former World of Stardom champion, former winner of the 5-Star Grand Prix, picks up her first 2 points with an eye rocker on Misa Matsui. Co-main event, Bozilla running through the Star League, picking up 2 more points on the pure white belt champion, Miko Ano, defeating her with her own move, the Styles Clash. And then in the main event, another must-see outing, not only from Sari, but from Mai Sakurai as well. Sari picks up her first 2 points of the tournament, defeating Mai Sakurai. with the Hammerlock Exploder. Okay, folks, so there's your seven results. Let's go through some highlights in the Matt Turner star ratings. For take that for what it's worth. So we get Mirai and Tanaka. They start out with using some double-team wrist lock exchanges onto one Myla Grace. Myla Grace hits a basement dropkick to Kazuna Tanaka for a two-count. Chaki is able to come in the ring using her hard-hitting action. I'm such a huge fan of her. Not only her in-ring work, but her character work as well. Each and every outing, she just seems to be getting better. Chaki gets a boot scrape onto Kazuna Tanaka. Tanaka is able to come back with a really nice armbar to Chiaki. Then Mirai is able to come in with an angle slam onto Myla Grace. Kazuna Tanaka takes Chiaki out with the Joshi-style dropkick. And that leaves the door open for Mirai to hit the Rainmaker on one Myla Grace. 3.5 stars. And I know I say this quite a bit, and I'm going to say it again. Myla Grace just gets better with each and every outing. She is a fantastic, fantastic wrestler. And I'm loving seeing the improvement that is one Myla Grace. We go to match number 2 with Nori, my new favorite wrestler. Saying that a lot. Taking on one Chika Goto. These two, it just didn't seem like this was a good match. But I was expecting like blow away. Like right around like a blow away match. Considering the fact that how great Chika Goto is. And Nori, who's like basically stealing the show here. In the Dreamstar Grand Prix, you know, she's had great outings. She had that great match with Mirai, that went to the time limit draw. She almost pretty much stole the show at Summer Destiny. Nori is somebody that I'm so blown away with, just how great of a wrestler that she is. And again, Chika Goto is one of my new favorites. She's got the coolest catchphrase in all of the, Marigold, you know, the, Go Chika over here, and the crowd is all into it. She's got some, pink and red highlights in her hair. She's looking so cool. She's got great charisma, great stage presence, great ring presence, great crowd psychology. This one, yeah, let's get into it. It just seemed like by no means was it bad. It was really, really good. Maybe I was just expecting just a little bit more. Maybe they just didn't have chemistry. I don't know. Nori starts this match off with some leg kicks, and then she's able to grind Chika Go Chika down with the cross face. Nori then hits a series of soccer kicks on Chika Goto. Chika Goto is able to come back with some forearms. She gets Nori in the giant swing. Nori is able to fight back with some of her fantastic striking spin kicks and lariat to Chika Goto. Chika Goto fires back with a lariat. Nori comes back with some more leg kicks. I like this, how that anytime Chika Goto, psychology here makes really good sense. Anytime Chika Goto gets on a roll or starts to build up some momentum, Nori just goes right to those leg kicks and is able to halt the momentum down of Chika Goto. I really like that. Chika Goto and Nori have a forearm trade-off that Chika Goto does actually pretty quite well on. But eventually Nori hits a big head kick and a front face suplex for a two count, almost like a cow catcher suplex. That was a really, or half ouch, excuse me, the one that Shiri does. Like the half ouch suplex, the cow catchers, the over under hook takedown. But she hits that headlock front suplex for a two count, and then puts Chika Goto away with a series of kicks that leads to a 360 spin kick for a three count. 3.5 stars for me. And then after this match, there was like some extra stuff that happened on the show. Jeepers Christ. Jeez Louise. There's some extra stuff that happened on this match because Chika Goto pushes Nori and then Nori starts kicking away at Chika Goto at the end of the match. So I don't know if maybe something happened in the match or that's something they didn't want to do or if they just reacted or if it's something that maybe that will lead to a rematch down the future because again, it just seemed like something was missing in this match. I had a 3.5 stars, which is obviously still a pretty good rating, but considering the fact of how much I'm blown away by Nori, especially in this tournament, and what a big fan I am of Chika Goto, it just seemed like it was just missing something, and maybe it's something they'll have to revisit, get back to it, and we can get back to what we all know will be a 4 to 4.25 star match. Extracurricular activity. I give up. Anywho, yikes. It's been a day, folks, but a great day. Now we get into this match was an absolute banger. Victoria Yuzuki versus Utami Hayashista, the current ace versus the future ace. This was great. Big lockup to start. Utami Hayashista uses her experience and her strength to get the early advantage with the big tackle, grinding Yuzuki down with the headlock. Yuzuki is able to come back with a big dropkick and a head scissors takedown. Utami comes back with some forearms and an air raid crash for a two count. And then we see Yuzuki firing back up with some drop kicks, some forearms, really using her explosive offense. She goes for the re-dream. Utami Hayashisa is able to block the re-dream and hit another air raid crash. Kazuna Tanaka, or excuse me, Victoria Yuzuki, comes back with a big Northern Light suplex for a two count, and then finally hits the re-dream, which is really cool because that's Kazuna Tanaka's move. Hits the re-dream for a two count. Again, Kazuna Tanaka, Victoria Yuzuki, tag team partners. So I think it's really cool that she's adopting Kazuna Tanaka, her tag partner's finisher in some of these matches. Utami's able to come back with a huge lariat and a German suplex. However, she cannot follow up on the German suplex because of all the neck damage done that Victoria Yuzuki has done in this match. I thought that was really cool, and I thought maybe Utami was really hurt. If you remember, it was right around this time last year that Utami was out for a handful of months because of certain injuries, I think, to her neck and her back and whatnot. So she hits this German suplex, and the way her selling was, I was like, oh, geez, it looked like she was really hurt. And she was like, she crawled all the way to the other side of the ring, and the ref was checking on her. I mean, the selling here from one Utami Hayashisa made it look legit. And that just goes to show you what a great performer Utami Hayashisa is. So I thought that was terrific. And not only that, but it puts over Victoria Yuzuki's prior offense, building up that work to her neck. Excellent stuff from both these wrestlers. Victoria Yuzuki is able to use that opening to get the rolling arrow for a 2.999 count. I thought that was the finish of the match. I really did. I bit so hard on that finish. I thought that was it. I thought the referee's hand hit the canvas. Again, a credit to not only the referee, but to Utami Hayashisa and Yuzuki to be able to hold that 2.999 count for as long as possible. Utami is able to fight through all the pain, hits a brutal, brutal lariat, and then follows it up with the shocking Baszler for the three count. Folks, I had this one at 4 stars. Phenomenal match between these two. I would love to see these two wrestle 3 times a month because this was great. And you can tell that they will constantly have better matches ahead of them. But this was absolutely terrific. Love that match. We are in the Dream League. We stay in the Dream League as Koki Amore taking on Natsumi Shozuki. Koki Amore, her first match in this tournament. Koki Amore, we see Natsumi Shozuki. She's going to use her speed to get the advantage in this match. We see it early on, but however, Koki Amore uses a chicken wing to slow down Natsumi Shozuki. Natsumi is able to eventually fight out of that, uses some kicks to put down the taller Koki Amore, the amorphous butterfly. She uses those kicks to set up her slingshot double knees that she does off the middle rope that I absolutely love. That scores her a 2 count. Koki Amore uses her size and strength advantage and is able to set up Natsumi Shozuki for a corner Yakuza kick, or the Hulua kick. That scores her a 2 count. Koki Amore comes off with another big running boot, and then she hits a ripcord cutter. I like that. I thought that was really, really cool how she uses like the ripcord, like the Rainmaker spot, but instead of the Rainmaker or knee that we see Konami use, she uses it into a cutter, and I think I've seen her do that once or twice before. I really, really like it, and Koki Amore should definitely add that to her arsenal because I think it was really, really cool. And really, really good timing. Natsumi Shozuki is able to fight back, locking Koki Amore in a Fujiwara armbar. She uses that ground game to then use some grounded kicks. And then that sets up the bullet train, the double knees into the corner for a 2 count. She then sets that up with a fast and explosive running Samato. That scores her another 2 count. Koki Amore is able to come back with some strikes, hits the Dominator for a 2 count, goes to the top rope. She misses the Amorphous Butterfly Splash. Natsumi Shozuki quickly rolls her up, scoring herself a 2 count. They go back and forth again. We hit a back suplex from Koki Amore into the Amorphous Butterfly Splash for a 2.9 count. Koki Amore stays on her game plan. It's this really wicked back suplex, dropping Natsumi Shozuki on the top of her head for a 3 count, scoring her the win. Not only a win, but a win over the flyweight champion. Will that mean Koki Amore gets a title shot somewhere in the future? I don't know, but this was an excellent match. 3 3/4 stars as Koki Amore gets her first 2 points of the tournament. We go over to the other league, the Star League, as the speed star herself, Misa Matsui, taking on the legend that is absolutely kicking ass, and Nanae Takahashi. Nanae Takahashi uses her experience, some ground attacks to slow down Misa Matsui. Easy story to tell. Nanae Takahashi is not going to want to play the speed game with Misa Matsui. And obviously, Misa's not going to want to get into a striking or a strength battle with Nanai Takahashi. Misa Matsui is eventually, though, able to get out of the ground attack of Nanai Takahashi, uses some lucha arm drags, and then starts to target Nanai's arm. I really like that. And then we do see some double stomps to the arm of Nanai Takahashi's. I thought that was great. Misa Matsui then goes to the top rope, misses a missile dropkick, or she hits a missile dropkick for a two count. Eventually, Nanai Takahashi uses a lariat to set up a neck crank. We see Nanai Takahashi really slowing down the pace of Misa Matsui. Misa Matsui is able to come back with a quesadora double stomp. So think of the prong hold into the roll up, and then uses not one, not two, but three double stomps, one after another. That scores her a 2.9 count. That was a really, really cool spot. And the psychology is making sense here. Nanai is trying to slow down and ground Misa Matsui, but anytime that Misa gets a little bit of an advantage, she's able to explode out with explosive offense. Nanai Takahashi is able to come back with a sliding D and hits a big forearm that looks like almost KO'd Misa Matsui. Misa Matsui is able to hit a Hurricanrana and a Shining Wizard combination that scores her a 2 count. Misa then stays on Nanai Takahashi, almost giving her a taste of her own medicine, locking her in an armbar. We do see then a leg capture, Northern Light suplex for Misa Matsui that scores her a 2 count. But Nanai Takahashi is able to come back with a forearm and a series of lariats for a 2 count. We then see she goes for the Nanai Rocker, but Misa Matsui is able to slip out with the O'Connor Roll into the Bob Backlund Bridge for a 2.9 count. That was another great false finish, another great roll-up, almost surprise. Very much we saw two matches prior with Victoria Yuzuki and Utami Hayashista. Eventually, Nanai Takahashi is able to come back. She hits the Nanai Rocker that she was looking for earlier for the 3 count. Another phenomenal match here. Nanai Takahashi. As Rob has said on this podcast several times before, she's on the run of her life. She really is. This is the best series of matches she's had in years. She's crushing it here in Marigold between what she was able to do with the matches with Bozilla, the tag matches with Naoi Ishikawa, the match with Mai Sakurai last week, and this match here with Misa, and obviously, who can we forget, that Cork and Hall main event match with Utami Hayashista. But this right here with Misa Matsui is absolutely incredible. This was fantastic. 4.25 stars for me. We go to the semi-main event in the Star League. Miko Anno taking on Bozilla. Miko Anno, if you remember, back in Summer Destiny, shocked the world and Bozilla when she rolled up Bozilla and was able to win and become the first ever pure white belt champion. Is it so nice? Can she do it twice? Bozilla certainly hasn't forgot, because as soon as the bell rings, Bozilla just is all over Miko Anno. I mean, she kicks her. She's forearms just dominating her, throws her to the floor. It's just beating her up really on all sides of the arena. Pitches her back in the ring. Hits a second rope Joshi dropkick that it looked like it almost caught Miko Anno on the bottom of her chin, which that could have gave her some neck damage. But Miko Anno was just so double tough. So double tough. Is able to come back with some leg kicks, big forearms, hits a big suplex. And then smart strategy here. She has Bozilla down here after the big suplex and then locks in like a no-handed sharpshooter, almost like a leg-laced knee bar. I really like that. Miko Anno then is firing up here. She knows that she's on borrowed time because she just got destroyed in the beginning of that match. She knows that any opening that she's got to make it count. She's just dropping bombs on Bozilla's with lariats, forearms, kicks, back and forth. She tries for the Styles Clash, can't get it. Bozilla's able to block the Styles Clash with a big back body drop. And then Bozilla actually hits the Styles Clash on Miko Anno for the win. 3.75 stars. This match didn't go long. It didn't need to. It told a simple story. Anytime that Miko Anno was on the offense, she was really trying to make it work. And then maybe she just got a little bit too ahead of herself trying to hit Bozilla with that Styles Clash. Ultimately, not only was it her undoing of the match and basically cost her the match. Bozilla, we've seen her. She got the Vader Bomb. She's got the Moonsault. She's got the Power Bomb. She's got that Drill a Hole Pile Driver. She can beat you a number of different ways. But she decided to add insult to injury and defeat Miko Anno with her own finisher, the Styles Clash. I thought that was genius. A great match. And Bozilla, 6 points in this tournament, is absolutely running away with the Star League. Very much like we thought that she would, at least in the early parts of this tournament. Okay, folks. We go to the main event. Mai Sakurai. Another main event. She main evented the show last week and was able to get a submission victory over one in Nai Takahashi. She's taking on Sari in this match. And these two wrestled maybe about 6 or 7 weeks ago, and Sari pretty much ran through her. But this is a completely different Mai Sakurai. And we can tell. Because even before the bell rang, Mai Sakurai jumped Sari. She can care less that Sariism, red belt champion, seedling champion, match of the year, selling out all these venues, teaming with Mayu, wrestling against Mayu, having the best matches. Takumi Roha, Azumi, she doesn't care. This is Mai Sakurai's company now. She doesn't care. She's got Sari. She basically thinks Sari has got a target on her back, and it's that red belt. Mai Sakurai is here to take it. So she jumps Sari. Outside brawl. Mai sends Sari shoulder first into the ring post, and then Mai Sakurai targets Sari's arm. Makes sense, because then you're taking away a lot of those clotheslines, and especially the exploder, or the uranage, whatever you want to. I'm going to call him exploder. Uranage, either way. Again, I'm a huge fan of Jun Akiyama. Sari's able to come back with the Muda Lock. We get a stiff slap exchange between the two. Sari then able to hit a superplex for two. Mai Sakurai follows up by, Mai Sakurai fighting spirits up, hits a Yakuza kick that sends Sari back out to the floor. Mai Sakurai then hits a huge dive from the post. Again, this is a completely different Mai Sakurai. Mai Sakurai then sends Sari into the Sari into the first row of chairs, throws her back in the ring, hits a big Joshi style dropkick, and then the Masahiro Chono Shining Black for a two count. Sari then, she's had enough here because she's on the back foot most of this match. She fires up. We get a brutal forearm exchange that Sari gets the better of. At this point, it's like, ooh, maybe Sakurai is bitten off a little bit more so that she can chew. Sari hits a basement dropkick and a fisherman suplex for a two count. Sari then goes to the top rope and hits this wicked, wicked double stomp to poor Mai Sakurai. However, Mai Sakurai not only kicks out of two, she fires back up with some forearms of her own. Hits the showstopper for a two count. Sari's able to come back with a regalplex for a two count. And this is great back and forth action as we're building up to this epic finish. Mai Sakurai hits a Yakuza kick and then another Shining Black for a two count. She goes to the top rope. Did the Rob Goodwin elbow drop. The Goodwin elbow drop. Mwah! Right to you there, Mr. Goodwin. That scores her a two count. Sari then tries for the exploder. However, Sakurai is able to not only get out of the exploder, but is able to keep contact with Sari and the Mai pan roll for a 2.9 count. Again, this was the third flash pinfall in this show that everybody bid on, including me. This is a great job from Marigold to be able to tease finishes like this because it really adds on to the match. Mai Sakurai hits a tiger suplex. That scores her a two count. After the kick out, though, Sakurai keeps the focus on Sari, gets the STF onto Sari. Sari gets the ropes, fires back up with some forearms, is able to then catch Sakurai off the rope with a big exploder for a two count. And then Sari is able to finally put Mai Sakurai away with the hammerlock exploder. 4-3, 4.25 stars. And I will say this, folks. Obviously, Sari gets the win here. Obviously, she's the one that got her hand raised and got the 2 points. But if you're basing this in the Bobby Heenan world of who won on points, not counting the three count, Sakurai had like 60-65% of this match, which was genius to whoever put it together. Because even though Mai Sakurai lost, she lost in the main event to somebody that a lot of people have as wrestler of the year or one of the top two or three wrestlers of the year. Not only that, but she's the champion of this promotion. In her first Dreamstar match, Sakurai took it to her. She kicked Sari's ass. It really just took those two last exploders to put Sakurai away, but Sakurai hit Sari with everything. Inside the ring, outside the ring, doing dives, tiger suplexes, kicking out of these double stomps, putting Sari in submissions. It's a great, great outing for one Mai Sakurai. She looked terrific here. And again, I said maybe about a month ago, Xena's the clear runaway for Most Improved Wrestler of the Year. Folks, we got about 3 months left, and Mai Sakurai is doing a great job making a claim to Wrestler of the Year. Folks, that'll do it for that show, the only show that we're reviewing on this episode of the Marigold Standard. But we are not done yet, folks. Not just yet. Because it's time for our gaze at one Julia. So we go to NXT, obviously in Full Sail University. Holy jeepers, folks. Full Sail University. There it is. The third time is the charm. We go to September 10th as we see Julia. She's getting ready for her match with Chelsea Green. We see Julia enter the building. And then we do see Julia taking on Chelsea Green. The match starts out with Julia with a stiff headbutt to Chelsea Green. Now, this isn't the headbutt she headbutts like Tam with or Sherry with, but she hits a pretty wicked headbutt onto poor Chelsea Green. Julia then hits a Josie dropkick for a two count. Chelsea Green comes back with a huge bicycle kick. Got to keep in mind, Chelsea Green wrestled in Stardom before. She is not too unfamiliar with the Joshi style of pro wrestling. She has taken the three-dom dropkick, maybe the most wicked three-dom dropkick ever. If you just type in Chelsea Green dropkick on Twitter, it comes up. Not only that, but she once challenged one Kairi for the Wonder of Stardom Championship in the legendary Corkin Hall. So Chelsea Green does a good job here keeping up with one Julia. Julia then locks in the spider web. Chelsea Green's able to come back with a beautiful German suplex and then a flatliner for a two count. Julia then hits a wicked belly-to-backdrop suplex and then a neck breaker off the apron. We get an outside brawl between the two where Chelsea Green throws Julia over the announcer table. I thought that was great. Chelsea Green then goes into the ring, goes for the missile dropkick, but no water in the pool. Chelsea Green misses the big missile dropkick. Julia quickly takes advantage, hitting the G-trigger and the Northern Lights bomb for the three count. This match went like a little bit over 6 minutes. I thought it was great. I thought most of this match was, you know, when it was announced, it's going to be like a 4 or 5 minute squash. It wasn't. Nandy Hedder even texted me right afterwards. He's like, I think Chelsea Green got a little bit too much in this match because we're building up for October 1st, CW, NXT, Roxanne Perez, and Julia. And I see his point. And I said, hey, partner, you know, I see your point, but maybe they just wanted to get a look at Julia selling. Again, not only that, but maybe she wanted to get some practice selling with all the different camera angles that the WWE provides. It's, you know, it's not Stardom. It's not Marigold. It's not anything like she's ever been to. The production quality is just on a completely different level. And maybe that's why they had her maybe on the back foot a little bit of this match, so she can kind of get down some of the selling and some of the facials and some of the timing with that. So that would be my guess. Like, I completely understand you kind of figured Julia coming in with all this fanfare, and damn right, rightfully so. I mean, Julia's phenomenal. I mean, she's on another level. The reason to give Chelsea Green that much offense, that would be my guess. Regardless, I was entertained in this match. I didn't mind that it wasn't the squash that a lot of people thought it was going to be or should have been. I was shocked that Julia's able to use the Northern Lights bomb. I figured maybe the Glorious Driver would be her finish, but NXT's letting her use the Northern Lights bomb. I'm all for it. And congrats and great job. I believe Vic Joseph was. I don't watch NXT as much as I should just because I just don't have the time. I think it's Vic Joseph is the announcer with Booker T where he puts over Julia was a former World of Stardom champion, a former Wonder of Stardom champion, and a former holder of the New Japan Strong Championship. So putting over Julia's Stardom lineage over here in NXT basically goes to show to any of the new viewers what Julia is all about. And I cannot, this was usually the Io and Kairi watch I wait till the next day to watch. This I actually watched live as it happened. And probably about a half an hour after this match happened, my Facebook DM and my Twitter DM was really blown up with people saying, okay, I heard you talk about it. Mostly personal friends of mine, people that I've known for years and years and years that really don't watch Stardom. They just watch WWE, NXT, and AEW. And they're like, okay, this Julia person I know came with a lot of fanfare. What can you tell me? Or what are certain matches to watch? It was really cool because people are going to be going back now watching through some Stardom stuff, obviously some Marigold stuff. Obviously her runs there were fantastic. Obviously Marigold, she was only there a couple months because the company's only a couple months old. But people are really, really interested in Julia, and rightfully so. So that wasn't the end of Julia, as we got a backstage segment where Julia was, she's almost like being translated by Funaki, which I thought was Kainzai Funaki, not Masa Funaki, the guy that started Pancrase with Minoru Suzuki. As cool as that would have been. But basically, they're trying to translate for each other, but Julia speaks pretty good English. And then Roxanne Perez comes into the picture as we're starting to build towards that match here coming up in just 3 weeks' time. And Julia basically tells Roxanne Perez, I know you're scared. It's okay to be scared. And Roxanne Perez says, no, I'm not scared. But she looks scared. But regardless, I'm super excited for that show on October 1st, Julia versus Roxanne Perez. And I think they're doing Trick Williams and Ethan Page. Again, I know quite a bit of Ethan Page through not only AEW, but through his work over in TNA or Impact, and I've seen a little bit of his stuff in NXT and what I've been able to see Trick Williams, I'm really impressed with as well. And again, I know, and people tell me all the time, you got to watch NXT. It's great. It's great. It's great. I know that it is. I just don't have the time. However, I will be watching everything that Julia does on the Black and Gold brand, because we are here to give you on the Marigold Standard our gaze at Julia. Folks, that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Again, we appreciate you understanding how, once again, myself and Rob, we just could not find the time. Like I said, our work schedules are just been so backlogged and so loaded, especially with a lot of these last minute meetings that he has to go through and that I've been experiencing as well. So, but hey man, that's the way the cookie crumbles. But again, instead of not giving you an episode, we figure I'll record my thoughts. Rob will record his thoughts. He'll put the news in, parachute it in where he needs to. And that'll be that, folks. So again, we appreciate your patience and your understanding. Hopefully next week we will be back with a normal me and him episode talking about all things Marigold. So folks, we greatly appreciate your support. We really, really do. Questions, comments, folks, anything you need from me, Matt Turner, OF, on the Instagram and or the Twitter. If you want to shoot me an email, that's perfectly fine as well. TheStardomCast22@gmail.com is the best way to get a hold of me via the email systems. And folks, that's going to wrap it up for another episode. We greatly appreciate your support. Can't do it without you. Because like I always say, it's just not my podcast. It's our podcast. Because we're all together, everyone's different. Everyone's special. Have a great day, everyone. Be kind to one another.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.